Hello and welcome to this episode of the Yellow and Blues podcast. We're back after a break. Venkat's joined me back on this podcast now. We are recording this after the disappointing end of India's what's the word I was looking for, you know, in terms of the 2020 World Cup. We'll have a look at the whole World Cup, you know, the winners, England, and you know, the finals, Pakistan, but obviously we'll also look at where India go after this World Cup and everything else in between in terms of what's happened over the World Cup. And then look ahead to like India's next tour to New Zealand, etc. Hello, Venkat. How are you? It's been a while.
Yeah. Hi, Srini. I'm doing very well. Thanks. Yes, it has been a while. And what a 2 or 3 weeks it has been in terms of cricket.
Yeah, we will talk about India's exit, if you like, you know, and probably look at overall rating. But let's start, you know, with the final and congratulate England on winning the T20 World Cup. It's fair to say they are the best white ball team, not just on the back of the two wins, you know, holding the two World Cup together, but I guess over the last 6 or 7 years, you would be hard pressed to argue that there's a better white ball team than England.
Of course, I mean they have put in a concerted effort from 2016 on. I think they have taken a lot of steps to make sure that this happens. They've got a fledgling league, which is the 100, which is making waves. So there's a lot of benefit that's trickled onto the white ball game from there. So yeah, there are a number of factors, but I think there was intent from the board to make sure that, you know, white ball game is, you know, really brought to the forefront.
Yeah, going back to the 2015 World Cup when Alistair Cook gave way as the white ball captain and Owen Morgan took over as the white ball captain at the it's just literally the beginning of that 2015 World Cup, and they lost to Bangladesh and exited even before the, you know, knockoff stages, etc. There was, you know, it's well documented the way Owen Morgan changed his team in terms of, you know, picking specialist white ball players and focusing on a brand of cricket rather than, you know, individual players. If you like, anybody who came into that team, you know, knew what the brand of cricket that England were playing, you know, which was basically all-out attack.
Yeah.
And you know, Jos Buttler, obviously, like, you know, has since taken over from Owen Morgan and has continued now. You know, which clearly has led them to, like, not just in terms of, you know, winning this World Cup and the 2019 World Cup, but they've also been, like, you know, they've been in the finals of the T20 tournament in 2016, which to be honest, they lost in that last four balls when Carlos Brathwaite hit four sixes. But otherwise, you know, going into that last over, you would have thought that was England's World Cup to lose, and that is essentially what happened. West Indies were in a completely different place at that point, you know. Actually, talking about that, you know, it's kind of slightly digressing, you know, it just shows the two different paths that West Indies and England have gone since the World Cup. England have gone to more heights, and West Indies didn't even qualify into the main round of this World Cup. That's how far they've fallen.
Yeah, I mean, there is that speaks to a couple of things. One, the relative, coffers of these two teams as well plays a big part to it. And so, you know, you can't just compare and say it's not based clearly on cricketing talent. Of course, that plays a huge part, but there's also, you know, how the West Indies Cricket Board, you know, kind of seesawed on various factors in terms of player how they looked after their players versus England, which was, you know, kind of really looking after their players and the squads and giving them enough exposure, but also making sure that, you know, the players got enough chances and exposure for leagues outside of England. And also, you know, kind of that made sure that players could balance between, whereas West Indies, I don't think, had that option really. So, and which eventually led to the fact that a lot of successful, you know, T20 players couldn't come together as a team. So,
yeah, one key takeaway from what you're just saying, you know, it's the fact that, you know, it is just not about the players. It's a whole, not just the players alone, you know, who play into it, but the entire system, including the board, the coaches, and the feeder system, yeah, into the thing. Everything matters, you know. So with West Indies, you can say there were so many talented players. You know, just looking at the various different leagues, you would say like West Indies had a bunch of talented players. However, the way even going back to that 2016 tournament, where the West Indies players were, I think they were almost on the verge of going on the strike. They had to get their own jerseys and all, yeah, of those things. In terms of, you know, and so it's a bit of like, you know, it's just not about just the players themselves playing out there, but the wider system, you know, also needs to perform from the point of, you know, picking the right players, the selection, the board sort of backing to say, we've seen this in England, you know, looking at the media and stuff in England, you know, when England didn't qualify for the World Test Championship, you know, when they lost New Zealand in 2021 against, you know, the first two tests that New Zealand came along. There was lots of hue and cry about, yeah, how England had focused too much on the white ball and neglected the test. So there is that element aspect of it as well. But yeah, just sort of looking at purely from a white ball perspective, there's a couple of other people also. It was Owen Morgan. It's now Joss Butler. But one big thread again, going back to the 2016 final, to the 2019 winners, and then 2022 finals, is Ben Stokes.
Yep, of course. I mean, you know, he's been the catalyst in terms of playing that brand of cricket that you mentioned. It kind of echoed in some of the test games he played as well, like the one against India.
Yeah, and also the one against Australia as well, the Ashes in Headingley.
Yeah, the one, it started there and then, yeah, with against India. But clearly the approach, he's the epitome of that approach in terms of how, I think, various captains, whether it's Joss Butler or Owen Morgan, wanted him to play, and he's a really good candidate. The other player, of course, is Bairstow, who blitzed India as well. I think they all play the fearless cricket. Drawing parallels to, you know, somebody from India, it's almost like Rishabh Pant's approach, going back, almost how Sehwag would have approached this. I think that's what, you know, if you really look at it, has, you know, made sure that England had come to the forefront.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point you make about Rishabh Pant. I was thinking about this in the sense of, before the start of this tournament, there was, I wouldn't say debate, but it's more about, there was a debate about, not about whether or not Ben Stokes should be picked into the England level or into the England squad, but more a debate of what was Ben Stokes' role in the T20 team. Yeah. It was not clear, like, you know, what his role was in the T20 team. And to be honest, even if you think about England's win in this tournament, I wouldn't say England played and won other than the one game against India. I don't think you would say England played and won based on the brand of the cricket, even from a batting perspective. Because if you the final, if you like, was actually won more by England's bowlers than their batsmen.
Yeah.
It was only the semi-finals, you would say, like, no, the England batsmen actually won it. The Owen Morgan brand of cricket and all of those things was more about what you would call the Barcelona football model of, you know, if you score four goals, we will score, you know, five goals against you, sort of thing. You know, whatever
Yeah.
you score, we can chase it down. And heck, Owen Morgan, Jos Buttler, you mentioned Johnny Bairstow, you could have picked Jason Roy.
Yeah.
All of those, you know, Alex Hales in the previous and now, if you think about all of them, they're all kind of, you know, from Liam Livingstone, including, you know, batting performance, the batsmen are the ones that have done it. Whereas if you looked at the final, it's actually England's bowling that won. When we know, like, you know, this has been said a lot, like T20 matches are won by batsmen, but the tournaments are won by bowlers. You know, so you need to have a good bowling attack to win a tournament. As we said at the beginning, we'll come to India. For me, the biggest kind of takeaway from this was the fact that, in some sense, you know, England won this tournament without probably playing the best cricket.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. I mean, of course, England batted very well in the semi-finals, but it was aided by some lackluster bowling. And I know Rohit Sharma gets a lot of grief, but yeah, I think T20 inherently is not a format where you can draw or recover from bad team selection, or, you know, if players don't turn up on that particular day, even for 3-4 overs, I think it's game over. I think England benefited by doing that, putting teams under pressure and letting them, I mean, England, Pakistan batting is a key this thing in the last game, I mean, the finals. And also England against India, they benefited from the weaker opposition or opposition's not having a game plan.
Yeah, which kind of goes into a nice segue in terms of, you know, because throughout the first 10 minutes of this podcast, we've entirely focused on England. We've not focused on their opposition in terms of Pakistan, and you mentioned Pakistan. Now, we, again, you know, across the Indian media, Twitterati and everything, if you like, you know, there's been this clamour about or talk about, like, you know, Rohit Sharma and KL Rahul's, to an extent, Virat Kohli as well, in terms of the poor, the lack of intent, if you like, rather than the poor, you know, the lack of intent when it comes to batting. I mean, Babar and Rizwan, across the tournament, you know, other than that one game against New Zealand, their batting has been really, really poor. And to a large extent, you know, again, you would argue, like, Pakistan really only played the best game in that semi-final against New Zealand. And that kind of just shows you how in knockout tournaments, you know, both India and New Zealand, you have a poor game. You know, you can play however good at the league stages, you have one poor game and you're out of the tournament. Pakistan, obviously, they won against... who was it? The one against Bangladesh in that last game. However, it was, you know, Netherlands, that's probably more they should be thankful to than, you know, than their own players. Because on that Sunday morning, you know, when the first game happens between Netherlands and South Africa, neither Bangladesh nor Pakistan, you know, kind of thought they were actually going to make the match would even be of any consequence. It was supposed to be an inconsequential match until Netherlands sprang the surprise.
Yeah, it was always going to be, South Africa in the league. But yeah, I mean, I definitely understand Pakistan made a backdoor entry, but they made the most out of it in terms of beating New Zealand, and then kind of looking at, of course, you got to still beat Bangladesh, which is a big team and a force to reckon with on their given day. But then they didn't show up, and of course, Pakistan made sure that they came into the final, which is a feat in itself. I don't think many other teams would have managed to, kind of reset themselves at the league stage and then made sure that they reached finals. But of course, when India was beaten the way it did by England, Pakistan, I don't think, stood a chance. The only thing was they were probably counting on the weather so that they could share the trophy. But really, England were really powerful. They got their act together, and their stamping win against England meant that Pakistan was already going with lack of belief. And even if you look at the social media and all the various articles and the interviews, even the players, I don't think, believed that they could just cross the England hurdle. I mean, I might be wrong, but that's the way I look at it.
It's like, Mark Wood didn't play against India. He was injured. But then once he came back against Pakistan, England had like a really strong bowling team. And Sam Curran, obviously, we've seen, he's been like, consistent throughout the tournament, and, especially bowling the death. I think it started in that 7-match tour of England's tour of Pakistan, where he started bowling into the death, and he really then produced the goods in terms of, bowling wise.
Lot of learning from CSK, would you say?
you can say that. Like, I know, I did read somewhere, whether it was a kind of more of a tweet from Curran itself or things like that, saying how much he had learned from CSK and Dhoni in terms of, not necessarily bowling, but I guess the game awareness and, and all of those things. So it's a conversation, we will get to, in terms of the IPL learnings, if you like, when we discuss or talk about India in sort of the second part of the podcast. But just kind of slightly moving away, again, we mentioned about South Africa and and Netherlands, etc. Just kind of, what did you think about the overall World Cup, if you like, the entire World Cup, in terms of, what's your take on how the World Cup has been,
I think it has been the way T20 tournaments typically are. You have an odd surprise in Netherlands. You have those familiar names coming up to the forefront. Australia going out when they did was a huge surprise, when they were touted to win the World Cup itself. That's, and in home conditions, which is a huge surprise, and everybody in Australia were on form. West Indies not making it is not a surprise at all. They are a shade of their past glory. But generally, I think the tournament was indicative of typical T20 tournament, where you have those odd surprises. What was really good to look at was Ireland, Namibia, Zimbabwe. Those are the countries that sprang a surprise. Of course, Netherlands. So that just goes to show that if ICC, is keen to develop cricket around these areas, if they pump in some money, and Ireland even suggested that if you do teams do tour England, they should have a couple of games in Ireland and Netherlands. That just goes to show the strength of associate cricket, associate nations. So that is very revealing. But again, it's typical of any T20 tournament. I think even in World Cup in the past, we have seen those odd surprises, like one of Kenya used to beat a big country, a test playing nation and stuff like that. And so this is not anything out of the ordinary. It is not anything that's new. We have seen this in the past. In a typical World Cup, you would have these surprises.
Yeah, I mean, it's I agree. So this is not the first time Netherlands are beating a big team. They obviously beat England in home conditions back in 2009. Netherlands beating South Africa is, It's yes, it's considered as an upset, but in reality, as you say, like, you know, within a 2020 tournament, all it needs is like, you know, one brilliant catch, a five ball spell here, or a five ball batting, you know, sort of that just takes away the match in one team or another team's favor, if you like. But for me, I think the one good thing is like, you know, Netherlands obviously finished in the top eight if you, from the top 12, which means they automatically directly qualify for the 2024 World Cup in the US, for the T20 World Cup in the US, and so therefore they don't have to go through the qualification rounds. It's and I think because it's being played, I'm trying to remember if it's like US and West Indies. I think it's US and West Indies. I can't remember.
US convention this year.
Which means West Indies obviously will qualify for that tournament as well as another direct. Obviously, the World Cup there is also increasing to 20 teams rather from, you know, the 16. So that's probably gives more. But compared to the World Cup in 2021 in Dubai, which, you know, a lot of it we saw, like, you know, the toss made a play played a major factor with the dew and etc. The team batting second having an advantage. I think that for me was a good thing about this tournament was the toss wasn't crucial. You know, it's a mix of some teams went chasing, some teams went batting first. Bowlers actually had a role, you know, you know, with the bigger boundaries and some of the, like, you know, odd dimensions of the various grounds in Australia, various different ones. There was something for everything, and then obviously the weather as well, sort of, you know, the rains making it more interesting in terms of points and etc. So all in all, I think this I know there was a lot of people complaining early part of the tournament to say, like, you know, why was it hosted in Australia with the rain etc. taking away some of the matches, like the Australia England match was washed out. But in all in all, I think they made their contributions as well, you know, and it definitely was a good tournament. Even from a Zimbabwe perspective, even though they lost, I think the likes of Sikandar Raza etc. really came to the fore.
Sikandar Raza has been a revelation. I mean, he reminded me of Shakib Al Hasan, he single-handedly carried Bangladesh over the years, and Sikandar Raza is no different. He has the passion. He can, he's individually brilliant and has rescued his team a couple of times. So it's just the most immediate thing is the way associate nations have played, and especially Zimbabwe as well. I think they can be a force to reckon with, provided, you know, with all things going okay their way in terms of the money being pumped into the boards.
Hopefully, like, you know, the some of these associate players actually get an opportunity in the IPL. Talking of the IPL, you know, the auction is scheduled, I think the mini auction for 23rd December in Kochi, and tomorrow is the last date in terms of playing players being
Trading the
traded.
thing.
With this podcast obviously being, like, you know, biased towards India and the CSK, kind of focusing on just on the CSK element of it, I think from what I'm hearing, there are reports at the minute that, you know, Chris Jordan, Adam Milne, and Jagdish and Mitchell Sander are all likely or to be released by CSK. And I think CSK are the team that's going to go in with the biggest purse into the auction on 23rd of December.
Yeah. I think that also goes to show. I mean, we can, I mean, if you want to talk about it now, we could do, or you want to look at it later, that's also fine. But if you want to stick around for CSK, yes, I think that also goes to show their strategy. I think CSK need to go back to the drawing board, look at their team, look at their constitution, because they have a lot of key players who have moved on. Suresh Raina, of course, Jadeja, maybe, and then Yeah, you do have those linchpin players, except Dhoni. I think it's a new team in a lot of ways. So obviously, it makes sense for them to have that big purse so that they can.
Yeah, I think it's probably the second biggest purse in terms of, you know, after Punjab. Punjab have got like, I think, 8.45 crores or something, and then CSK have around close to 8 crores. So it'd be interesting to see how they go in the auction. Looking forward to that. Yeah, we'll keep an eye out on the auction and what's happened, you know, with CSK, and we'll probably look more into that in the next few weeks when the auction gets closer. I just wanted to, like, you know, sort of bring around the CSK element of it. So I mean, I know we kind of missed out on, you know, some of the other things in terms of the IPL actually going to be expanding further in the next few years, you know, going, I think eventually it is going to go to the home and away and go to like 94 matches. But we'll go, you know, sort of talking about the IPL, it's probably a good sort of opening or segue in to look at, because that's obviously one of those things that's been doing a lot of you know, it's probably within our own, you know, the people we talk to, and, you know, within the fans of the game, if you like, it's always put us one of, whenever India lose, you know, whether it was the 2021 World Cup, 2022 World Cup, it's always put in as a reason as to why India don't succeed in World Cup. And since the start of the IPL in 2007, they haven't won the World Cup, T20 World Cup. That's probably a good place for us to start in terms of, you know, I mean, I'll start with kind of, you know, what do you think in terms of that? And then we can kind of go into, like, you know, sort of dissecting India's performance through this tournament.
Yeah, if at all anything, I mean, the common sense says the more T20 you play, irrespective of how you perform, the one thing that you look at, so just to complete what my thought was, that the more you play, the better you're going to get as a player in certain conditions, especially handling pressure and so on and so forth. But where exactly this IPL, in my view, may be affecting, and I'm not saying it is, may be affecting, is that it creates a lot of leaders. And if you look at India, for example, India team, Rahul is a captain. Kohli was captaining for a long, long time. Pandya, Rohit Sharma, not to mention. And so every top four or five players there, except for Surya Kumar Yadav, are all captains. So I don't know if that kind of makes it slightly difficult for a captain to rein in the players, or, you know, kind of take their feedback. And I don't know if they are, there is that element. That's the only thing that I could think of possibly. But otherwise, there is also the element of every other player across every other team knowing some of the strengths and weaknesses of Indian players. I think that is given in across the board. That same it can be said about BBL or 100 or CPL or PSL. Yeah. So the only thing that I see is somebody mentioned the Premier League example of England not winning World Cup, but they are individually really brilliant players across various Premier League groups. So there is probably some thing to it. I think this might be one of those things that we probably gloss over, is that the egos that it creates and for them to gel well as a team slightly becomes an issue. And I didn't see that in display in the game at all, but I'm just thinking that this could be one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Ashwin, again, you can add another one to that list, you know, who was captain, you know, with Punjab. But yeah, that example of, you know, the Premier League in football, you know, and England haven't won. I mean, again, the argument goes back to the fact, like, you know, you could pick that and say Spain have got a La Liga, or, you know, France have got their own football league, and etc. And every It's the feeder system that feeds into, like, you know, you need teams to play, players to play football. There is obviously a massive difference in the sense of, take England, you know, they play the T20 Vitality Blast and they've gotten a tournament 100. You know, Pakistan have the PSL, Australia have the BBL. So it is not, yes, I find it very, very difficult to, like, you know, say IPL as the root cause as to why India doesn't perform well in an ICC tournament, because you think it's like, you know, when it comes to the IPL, you know, people just look at and say, like, oh yeah, they play for the money. Whether you play for the money or not, ultimately the thing that remains is the fact that you play. You know, you still have to perform as a player, you know, to command the higher salaries and all of those things. So it's like somebody becomes a brand is by actual performance, you know. You pick someone and say, like, you know, I think there was a comment from Wasim Akram across, you know, saying, like, you know, Avesh Khan was bowling around 120, 130, whereas he was bowling in the high 140s in the IPL. You pay him 24 crores. Why is he? I mean, those are, like, you know, just throwaway lines. You know, it's you again, you can pick statistics that choose to prove what you want to prove, and you can prove anything with it. You know, it's just like, you know, just picking up one particular sample size or just one particular match where he bowled at 130 and say, oh yeah, he bowled 130. I look at it and say, like, you know, with the IPL, it's completely different. You know, you play with completely different set of players, and so therefore, as a result, you know, whether you perform or not, it's a combination. Gujarat Titans won this year. You know, it was like not the same set of, you know, they had a different skill set of players, both batting and bowling, and so therefore, you know, you win that, and it, that's a league where you play 14 games or whatever, however long, and you win. To me, the problem I see is more in terms of India, and again, I think the focus has a lot of been on, like, you know, sort of Rohit Sharma, his captaincy. Rohit Sharma probably became captain of India on the back of his 5 IPL title wins, but not maybe his 5 IPL title wins, but the fact that, you know, Mumbai Indians had won titles under him was the reason why he was made captain. You know, when you looked at it, like, the fact that Kohli was, you know, he remained captain of RCB for a long, long time, but he never won a title. And again, this all goes back to, like, you know, it's not one individual, it's a whole team that has to perform. And you have to move with the time. You know, India seemed to be in a space where England were in 2015, playing a brand of cricket, essentially.
Yeah.
That's kind of outdated.
Yeah. And I don't think Rahul Dravid would have held that cause. I don't know. I can't speak for, but you know, you tend to view the world with certain thing, that technique. I mean, I would have opened with punt, and especially when Rahul was struggling to drop him, they weren't bold enough to take those decisions. They did eventually when DK was struggling. There is an equal case to say, okay, can we have a left-right combination? So players don't find that. So probably Rohit Sharma, Punt could have opened, giving them a depth of batting as well as some youth. And also, I think this campaign, I think India are the oldest team, generally, if you really look at it. And I don't know if that kind of has...
I wouldn't really put that in. I mean, from a fielding perspective, I don't think India were poor at all, you know, from an overall perspective, because the real place where you would see the age is when it comes down to fielding. Yes, you know, you could argue the fact that, you know, lack of Bumrah and Jadeja was a factor in terms of, you know, from a bowling perspective, or and then Jadeja kind of balancing the team again from a batting perspective. But India seem to be playing this brand of cricket. You know, that's where I think India lost, is where they almost conserve wickets for the first 10 overs and then they go hard the last 10 overs. And even that match that India won against Pakistan, you know, I know it's been featured, you know, they've talked about Kohli and all of those things. We did as well, you know, at the beginning of that one. But again, if you break it down, the reality is, like, it was just the last two overs that Kohli really did it in terms of winning, you know. we should have never been in that position in the first place. If we
Exactly.
had battered, like, you know, right up front, you know, in a better way, we would have never reached that point.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no defense in terms of the approach. We have seen it in the results. We have seen it even in the games that India won, that brand of cricket is not going to be helpful. Of course, you're going to lose games. Of course, you're going to lose it in a spectacular fashion if we go attacking. And I think India, in terms of finding that balance, have to lean towards playing more attacking cricket and having, if at all anybody is going to play the singles game, that should be the job of 4, 5, and 6, or even 5, 6, and 7, rather than 1, 2, and 3, and 4.
Yeah, to me, we're trying to fit, or rather, we're trying to play a brand of cricket that kind of, you know, we pick people and then trying to work around them, rather than to say, like, no, this is what we're going to play cricket, and then kind of fit in. Some people have to be dropped. It was interesting. I think a tweet from ESPN Cricket for saying, like, you know, who's your team for 2024, India team for 2024? And they had, I think, Hardik Pandya, I think it was Rishabh Pant probably, and Bumrah. That's probably the only three players.
Yeah.
May have been Sky Hardik Pandya, not even Pant. Maybe Sky Hardik Pandya and Bumrah, to say, like, you know, those are three who are thing. India definitely need to rethink their approach, you know, before they rethink the players. There is this whole thing about, like, you know, Rahul as a stat padder, where, you know, he only plays against weaker teams, bullies them and scores runs and kind of, you know, builds up his stats. But when it's come to crunch games, now for me, you know, I've said this in terms of Rahul should have been dropped and all of these things, you know. People will argue, like, well, Virat Kohli was going through the roughest of patches. He was given such a
long
rope. Why not for Rahul? My argument would that have been, like, you know, I would have dropped Kohli a long time ago. Clearly, that shows how little cricket I know. But, you know, whereas in terms of Kohli, then, you know, has come back and kind of proved and he can do it. So, you know, Rahul may well, by the time 2024 tournament comes in, he may well have turned around his form and actually perform well. You know, there is still a lot of time to go for that one. But even with this team, you know, you take Rohit Sharma in an ODI, it seems like, you know, there's a completely different mindset, you know, where he just goes right after the bowling. Whereas, I don't know, from a T20 perspective, he just seems to be, like, you know, playing so conservatively. Rishabh Pant is another one. You know, Rishabh Pant almost seems to be like the opposite, where in a test and ODI, he seems to be better a test player than an okay ODI player. And then he just doesn't know what he is in the T20 format.
Yeah, exactly. I think the ability, or the sometimes that happens, you've seen Sehwag also didn't shine really in the limited overs format. I think that insurance that you could defend certain balls gives you the ability to go out and attack things that you wouldn't attack. And I think I've seen a lot of players who promised to be swashbuckling in ODI and in test often haven't really played very well in T20. And I think this one is a skill in itself. You know, you got to be more, you know, open-minded in terms of the shots that you offer. You can't have a templated response, and you can see why people like Butler and Surya Kumar Yadav succeed in that, because they are so open-minded in terms of their approach to the game, and the intent is definitely there. So yeah, I think going back to your point, yes, India would need a lot of changes, but you can be rest assured that is coming. We have the ODI format to tackle next year, I suppose. So I think that would be their focus, to a way to regain the white ball crown. But yeah, I don't think India is not equipped to do that. We have enough talent pool. It's only somebody looking at the leadership coming together and saying, okay, this has been a an embarrassment. Let's go back and start our campaign again.
Well, I'll come to the sort of your point about the India ODI squad, and we'll probably have a quick look at because India, obviously, you know, as we've said in previous podcasts, the Indian bandwagon just rolls, you know, the juggernaut or the bandwagon just rolls on. You know, they're already in literally on Saturday or Sunday, or you know, India lost on Friday, was it, or Thursday, the semifinals. Yeah. And then Sunday or Monday, I think I saw a tweet from Surya Kumar Yadav saying, like, no, hello, Wellington. He's already moved on to New Zealand for the series starting, the T20 series starting on Friday. And then obviously there is the ODI series that starts after that. So we'll have a look at those two things. Just finishing on the kind of, you know, when India and the changes ahead, things. There's a couple of other points that I wanted to kind of, you know, get kind of your thoughts on this. One is about split captaincy and coaching. I think Vijay Lokapalli, of formerly of, you know, the Hindu and stuff, I read one of his tweets sort of mentioning, like, you know, MS Dhoni could probably be a good white ball coach and Rahul Dravid look at the test, you know, sort of split coaching model. And similarly, having a split captaincy as well, where Rohit kind of is the test and ODI captain and somebody else pick up the T20 captain. What's kind of your thinking on that?
I was going to say the same thing. I mean, Hardik Pandya, for example, has a lot of camaraderie with the captain, I mean, Dhoni, who would be probably the ideal coach. And I think India does not need coaching. They need a belief system. They need a template to go about how to go about their game. I think Dhoni can bring that to the forefront. I don't know if you know, the board will be open for that kind of.
Will Dhoni be open? That's a bigger
question.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know,
that's
board may be open, but, you know, we saw that in the last tournament in 2021. You know, when he was kind of parachuted in just before the tournament as a mentor, and nobody really knew what the role actually meant, kind of thing. For me, again, I mean, I look at that and think, like, you know, the Dhoni as a captain on field could change games. You know, he had the, if you like, you know, it was under his control. Dhoni sitting outside, you know, even though giving a belief system, etc., how much will he be able to actually affect games? He could affect games as a wicketkeeper in terms of by making the appropriate bowling changes, or as a batsman, you know, actually doing it. So that's completely different from, you know, sitting outside and being able to make the changes. Yeah. He's not going to make the bowling changes, and he's not going to affect one of those, you know, quick reflex stumping or score runs. So for me, I'm kind of not sold to think, like, you know, just because Dhoni could do it while he was a captain, he can do it as a coach.
No, I think there is yes and no. I mean, you do have CSK, and CSK literally. One, he's definitely part of the selection and the strategy crew, along with
Fleming. But again, that goes back to my point about, like, you know, Dhoni is actually playing. Like, you know, so it would be interesting if like, you know, Stephen Fleming, if Dhoni went to Stephen Fleming's shoes and did not play and make a difference or not. But so that's kind of, you know, one thing. But the split captaincy in coaching, then, you know. If you think about it, when it'd be an interesting one if India goes back to that split captaincy, especially. Yeah. I mean, we've never had a split coach, so to say. No, we've all been, well, the odd exceptions being when India played in Ireland and Zimbabwe, maybe Lakshman sort of took over as coaching because Dravid was looking after the test team coming into England, if you like, and, you know, now away to New Zealand again. Dravid and co have been given a break and Lakshman's kind of leading the coaching. That's the kind of interim sort of or stand-in coach, you know, not really split level, split coaching.
Yeah.
But the split captaincy argument for me was the whole point the captaincy was taken away from Kohli was because there was a big thing made about saying we won't have a split captaincy and so Rohit Sharma will be the captain across formats.
It's just a very confused this thing. As a viewer, as a Indian team follower, I couldn't quite get the rationale. And I think, you know, in years to come, you would find memoirs and books being written on biographies would contain the actual details of what is actually transpired. You know, coming back to the split captaincy, I think that's the right way to go about it, because these two formats or three formats require entirely different approach. As other teams are carrying that, it's getting accentuated. 10 years back, you could almost say white ball. Where, you know, now ODI seems like a test, actually, because the amount of time you could recover. I mean, India would still, now Rohit and Rahul or Virat, the way they played is perfect for an ODI game. It's, you know, textbook almost. Whereas in T20, you just don't have the time. So, yes, of course, you know, coming back to the split captaincy, I would club ODI and probably test, you know, in the same listing and have T20 separate, if at all there is, because there is room for recovery here. There is no room for recovery in T20.
Yeah, that's true. The last thing on, you know, before we finish off the India one and then look at like India in New Zealand, was this, you know, we talked a lot about IPL and stuff, but again, where's your thinking on, you know, India players actually going and playing in the BBL, the 100, CPL, etc., you know, coming up with the South Africa League? What do you think? I mean, because again, that's one of the reasons that's been put forward, was the Australian team, or rather the English team, if you like, a lot of the players have experience playing in the BBL.
Yeah.
Alex Hales was obviously the one that was talked about. I was trying to think in terms of, you know, from the rest of the team. I can't remember Moeen Ali playing in the BBL. Adil Rashid, again, I was struggling. May have, because I haven't followed the BBL closely enough to know. I know for a fact Alex Hale did, and some of the others. Sam Curran, again, I'm struggling.
David Malan,
definitely, yeah. So there's a few players you could say, like, you know, probably the likes of Chris Jordan,
yes.
They do. Mark Wood, I couldn't think of as well, you know, in terms of playing in the BBL. But in terms of, you know, yes, the Indian players, you know, it will give them more exposure to other countries and things like that. Maybe the likes of your Rahul and Kohli, Rohit Sharma, etc., may not want to go. Whether other teams will pick the likes of your Shreyas Iyer and Shubman Gill and, you know, Avesh Khan or Akshar Patel, etc., into these leagues. I know Rahul Dravid was also asked about this, and he said, well, it's up to the BCCI. And I'm not sure where the BCCI is on this one.
It's just a knee-jerk reaction, Srini. You know that BCCI is not going to let go of the Indian IPL exclusivity of Indian players. And most of these comments that I was going to say, even when you asked about IPL being quoted as the reason for India's downfall, it's always rooted in anti-incumbency. They don't. It's very easy to go after a fairly successful, financially viable board and blame it for everything. I mean, if something makes money, I mean, we need to understand sport apart. These are institutions that are financially, need to be financially savvy as well. You know, that's why you don't have a Netherlands or a Zimbabwe or Ireland coming up with so much of supply chain in terms of players. Whereas India is able to do is because of the financially stable and successful league. So there might be some this thing validity to some of the claims, but most often it's always laced with some kind of, you know, something is successful, people always want to have a go at it, and there is IPL is no different. You can see in all our conversations with our English friends, in the teams, in the moment IPL is mentioned, there is always a strong and a visceral response almost to say, oh, IPL is the reason. And now, but the same people will, you know, kind of go and watch the 100 or follow it with the real passion.
Yeah, for me, I one of the reasons I never picked the IPL as a reason why India hasn't performed well is because a lot of the teams, if you like, you know, pick the Australian players who won the World Cup last year, or some of the English players who won the World Cup in 2019, who won the trophy this year. They've all played in the IPL. They've all learned from the IPL. They've all gained from the IPL. And I'm not talking about from a monetary perspective. I'm talking about from a cricketing perspective as well, you know, in terms of improving their skills and et cetera. So I just don't subscribe to the theory that, like, you know, that it's because of the IPL that India haven't won anything. I think it's just more to do with how we as a team have a mentality in terms of playing in tournament, if you like. Anyway, moving on, you know, as with kind of all things, you know, yes, the tournament's finished, you know, India's moved on. We've time for us to move on as well. India move on to, as I said, you know, a few minutes ago, next New Zealand start the first of the 3T20. I think it starts on Friday. And I'm not surprised about the T20 squad. You know, Hardik Pandya is captain. Most of the players that actually traveled to Australia are there. You know, there's been some who have taken rest, their Kohli or Rahul, DK, Rohit Sharma, Ashwin, etc. And I think some of these are players who I think will no longer, well, I wouldn't say no longer play T20 because they could potentially play, you know, in the next few months, but unlikely to be in the 2024 World Cup squad. This should be a cycle of, like, you know, starting to build toward the 2024 cycle in terms of this team that's been selected.
Yeah.
Just looking at the squad, you know, Hardik Pandya as captain, Rishabh Pant as the vice captain, wicket keeper. From a bowling perspective, you've obviously got, you know, from a pace perspective, you've got Ashdeep Singh, Mohammad Siraj, Shubman Gill. Umran Malik is the one that I'm looking forward to. I mean, we talked about Umran Malik a while ago during the IPL, etc., and said he's very, very raw. He's got pace, but he's very, very raw. And, you know, I think talking about during the sort of, you know, his playing for Sunrisers, we said he's still not got his radar right, etc. That is very, very raw and he needs to be improvement. So these are the opportunities for him to make those improvements. Again, the likes of, you know, Shubman Gill, Ishan Kishan, probably in terms of the opening batting slot. I'm surprised, like, Ritraj Gaikwad isn't in the squad. That's one surprise for me from a T20 squad perspective. Just looking at it, Shubman Gill is the one opening. I'm not sure who's going to open with him, who's you would call
Sanjay Thompson. Or Ishan Kishan, probably.
Ishan Kishan, you know, Ishan and Kishan. He play as a field. So there's obviously three wicket-keeping batsmen here, like, you know, in the Rishabh Pant. Or could you put the Rishabh Pant as a left-hand, right-hand batsman and
and then
Rishabh Pant saying almost like the Joss Butler role, as a opening batsman. It'll be interesting to see how India go and whether they can start to, like, you know, build towards that tournament in a different approach.
Yeah, that is one definitely. There is also, you know, there is also the ODI squad. If you really look at it, there are a lot of overlaps, so that could be one of those things. Hardik Pandya clearly not anywhere in the ODI setup. So it's Shikhar Dhawan suddenly captaining. And then you have Deepak Kodar, Surya Kumar Yadav, and pretty much most of the team stays exactly the same. Ashdeep, Deepak, Kuldeep. Whereas there are minor differences. You know, you do have three or four players. But I don't know. I don't know.
That was what I was going to say when you were talking about, like, you know, India's focus on the 2023 World Cup. And to me, it felt like, you know, this is an opportunity that we are losing. But I have no idea why Shikhar Dhawan is kind of, unless you know, Shikhar Dhawan's going to be the opening partner for for Rohit Sharma.
Rohit Sharma, that, yeah.
Then I can't see. I mean, Shikhar Dhawan is likely to be like what, close to 38 by the time that tournament comes around, and he's definitely not going to be playing. I for sure, like Shubman Gill would probably be my opening batsman, you know, if along with Rohit Sharma or you know Rahul.
It'd be 37 by the time that that tournament comes, but yeah, it is a bit strange why you would have you know somebody like Shikhar Dhawan if he. I mean, to be fair, if he's going to be part of India's World Cup plans, yeah, by all means. But I think this is a different team.
Yeah, I know they're probably looking at saying Rohit Sharma wanted a break, so he's kind of taken that break. And so therefore, I would have just gone with Rishabh Pant as captain. You know, I mean, this almost feels like, you know, the these number of ODI series are like Shikhar Dhawan benefit series. You know, that trip to Ireland, the trip to Zimbabwe, this to New Zealand, it almost feels like, you know, the Shikhar Dhawan benefit series is going on. And this is where, you know, it comes back to India's like hanging on to players, you know, and sort of I mean, I'm at loss for like, you know, to say why Shikhar Dhawan's still opening. Well,
yeah, anyway. Dinesh Karthik as well. You know, he had a long run, and now he's been. I think clearly he's.
Yeah, I think that's the end of Dinesh Karthik.
And you can. I think I can also say Ashwin. Has played his last white ball.
White ball, yeah. Pretty much those two of like definitely from a white ball perspective.
As a Tamil Nadu fan, it is a bit this thing, but yeah, there you go. I mean, and rightfully so. I'm not even saying anything. I mean, here there are a number of people who they have to clearly move past, and definitely.
Yeah, I would argue like, you know, Washington Sundar is kind of, you know, from a Tamil Nadu perspective, you know, is the one, which is why, where I said, like, you know, I was surprised to see Ruturaj Gaikwad not in either of the, unless I missed the news somewhere that he's injured, but I was very surprised to see Ruturaj Gaikwad not being in either of the squads. As an opening batsman, you know, I would have thought, like, you know, well, there's your ready-made opening batsman. Put him in terms of, you know, whether it's the ODI or the T20 format, you know, in terms of next one with Shubman Gill.
Yeah.
I must say, I'm very, very surprised that he's not in either of the squad. He's definitely the one that's a surprise for me.
A Devon Conway kind of player.
yeah. So, anyway, that is a surprise. On kind of that note, you know, it's time to wrap this week's podcast. And, you know, it's good to be back. We look forward to the post-New Zealand series the next time. Well, not maybe post-New Zealand, maybe the post-T20, you know, by the time kind of the next podcast when we do, we'll have had a couple of games. So looking ahead to that. I don't know whether I was going to say looking forward, but I'm not sure if I'm looking forward to it. It's definitely India needs to start building the cycle. But if you like the sound of this podcast, please do subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already done so, and leave your reviews and ratings about the podcast on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or Google Podcast, or any other platform that you get your podcast from. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Yellow and Blues. And so until next week, goodbye.